morning, New Mexico, and welcome to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Mary Charlotte. We're broadcasting live from the Santa Fe Bacon Company on Cordova Road and streaming on the web at ksfr.org. We're also podcasting at the website santafe.radiocafe.org, where you can listen to the show anytime you want, thanks to Santa Fe's Dotfoil computer services, and you can also subscribe to the show on iTunes. Later on in the program, Robert Knott will be here with us speaking of the arts. Right now, I would like to welcome storyteller Joe Hayes. He has been at the Wheelwright Museum in the summers. This is going to be his 26th year at the Wheelwright, and he will be there telling stories on Saturday and Sunday evenings at 7 o'clock. It's a free admission in Santa Fe. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thanks, Mary Charlotte.
So, you are a storyteller, and you've been doing it for so many years. How did you find your gift for telling stories?
Well, I just started telling stories to my kids when they were little, because my dad would tell stories to us when I was a kid. And as soon as I did that, I realized it's really fun to tell stories. So I started to look for more kids to tell stories to. I only had two of my own. And one thing just started leading to another, and before long, people were inviting me to come and tell stories to kids, and I thought, maybe I could just turn this into my career.
And so you tell stories without props and gadgets and stage sets and pictures?
Yeah, I guess I'm kind of a traditionalist. I just tell the stories.
And as some people have said, the pictures are better that way.
Well, I think so, too. I guess we tend to do what we enjoy ourselves, and I enjoy listening to a story and having the freedom of just creating the story myself and not having the storyteller act it out or use props or use costumes or anything. I just want to make that all up with my own mind.
What were some of your favorite stories when you were small?
Well, my favorite stories were just something my dad telling about things that happened to him when he was growing up. You see, my dad was born in 1896, so you can imagine what the world was like when my dad was a kid. So he would tell about going down to the blacksmith shop and working the bellows for the blacksmith, and that was a big treat for the little boys to do. He would tell about delivering groceries with a horse and cart when he was in high school. So I just love to let my imagination go back to the time when my dad was a little kid.
Do you remember any early stories or stories that you read to your own children that were out of books or fairy tales or myths that you particularly loved?
Well, my brother and I, when we were kids, loved the King Arthur stories. My dad used to tell us stories. My mom used to read the boys' King Arthur to us. We were just enthralled with the Arthur stories. We used to get old pillowcases and cut a hole in the top and paint a red cross on the front and make swords out of sticks and have sword fights. I really, really loved those when I was a kid.
Now, do you find that there are some stories that little boys like better and some other stories that are more girls, for girls?
In my storytelling these days, no, not really. It seems as though the boys and the girls pretty much react the same to the stories.
What are their favorite stories now when you tell stories to young people?
Well, I tell stories that they're all based on traditional stories, you know, old folk tales, folklore from the Southwest. I suppose it depends somewhat on the age. When the kids get to be about 4th, 5th, 6th grade, then of course their favorite story is La Llorona. And some younger kids will ask for it too, but some of the young kids are too frightened by it, so I can't tell that. But always kids will ask for a scary story. They always want to tell us a scary story. And for the little kids, that just means you say boo. Ooh, that was scary. But I think that's universal. Kids will ask for a scary story.
Why is that? Why do they like to be scared?
Well, I think it's that same impulse that makes kids get on walls and walk along to see if they're going to fall off or climb to the top of the jungle gym. We all have the impulse to challenge ourselves, to see if we're going to have the courage to do this or that, or if we're really going to survive it. Yeah, but most of us don't push ourselves to the limit where it really gets dangerous for us.
Right.
So that's why you have to be careful what kind of story you tell to different age groups, because they want a story that feels scary to them, but not a story that really feels threatening to them.
Well, where is the line where a child or any person who's listening to a story still knows that they're safe?
Well, I think it has to do with the context and with the person who's telling the story. If the person who's telling the story feels comfortable to them, feels like a kind person, feels like they're creating a sense of security for them, then they handle scary material much better. Or if they're with their family, or if they're in a comfortable situation, if they're in a place that doesn't feel all that secure and they're not so sure about the person who's telling it, then they get much more frightened.
There's also, I mean, I remember being a little kid, and you know, monster stories were not that scary to me, because even though they were scary in the moment, after they were done, because I knew there were no monsters. My parents had assured me that there were no monsters. Mm-hmm. But stories about, like, real people who could come in your windows and stuff, those haunted you.
Those are really... I never tell stories like that. Never, ever tell stories like that. Stories that create the sense that the world is a threatening place. I'm not interested in stories like that.
So the stories you gather from the Southwest and that you tell, what kind of stories are they? Where do you find them?
Well, when I first started out, I started going around talking to people and trying to pick up stories. I thought, well, that's what a storyteller needs to do, is find the old-timers and learn the old stories. And I put a lot of time into it and got very little back out of it, because this was already the late 70s, and people weren't telling stories the way they did 50 years earlier. And
they just weren't telling them anymore?
They just were not telling them.
Was there also an element of they didn't want to tell you because they didn't know you, that kind of thing?
Well, there's some of that element, perhaps, but the real important factor is that the oral tradition just was not strong the way it had been earlier. Because by that time, of course, you know, TV and radio and movies and had all come all over New Mexico, and people just weren't doing the traditional arts the way they had done them. So they would say, oh, yeah, my grandpa would tell stories. They tell a story about, and then they kind of summarize the story. They say, can you tell the story? No, I can't. But what I realized was that earlier, folklorists had collected very thoroughly. And so I found out it was much more productive for me to look at material that had been collected earlier by academics, and then from that work out my way of telling the story.
I have often thought about, and we've talked about this on the show, when people are academics or archivists and they collect things, then what happens to them? Do they go into the deep dark? And you're somebody who actually brings them out into the light of day again.
Exactly, yeah. And of course, now... there has been more interest in that archival material. For a long time, it was pretty much neglected and considered of so little importance that the early collectors and the early publications weren't even copyrighted, because people thought, you know, who's going to want to use this material? Now everybody copyrights everything, because you never know, down the road somebody might want to use it. But at the time it was collected, it was considered a sincere academic endeavor, but it wasn't. Didn't. Nobody thought it had any application in the everyday world.
So, are you telling Pueblo Indian stories, Spanish stories?
Yes, and tall tales. Yeah.
Tall tales. Mm-hmm. Can you tell us? Do you have a tall tale on the top of your head?
Oh, I really love to tell tall tales. I don't tell as many as I do of some of the other kinds of stories, but I really love tall tales. And you know, when I used to travel around New Mexico, I met a man who had homesteaded in New Mexico, you know, way back in the early part of the 20th century. He had 160 acres. You know, you could get it for free from the government, and He had a milk cow, he had a mule to plow the fields with, he was going to do some dry farming, but mostly he was going to raise chickens. You probably don't know about chickens. Sometimes a hen will make a nest in some dark corner or high, hard to get at place, because she doesn't want the farmer to find her eggs and take them away. She wants to settle them and hatch them out and have some babies. This man had one hen that was better than any other at hiding her nest. But no matter how much effort it took, he would look for those eggs, because that hen laid the biggest eggs of any hen on the farm. In fact, her eggs were so big, it only took 8 of them to make a dozen. But I think if the man had realized how much she wanted to have babies, he would have let her hatch out some of her eggs. He didn't realize until one time when a hailstorm hit that farm. Great big balls of ice came battering down out of the sky, knocking holes in all the buildings, beating the crops back into the ground. When the storm was over, the farmer walked around to see what the damage was. He went out to the chicken yard. In one corner of the hen yard, there was a pile of straw with six or eight big hailstones on top of it, as big as hen's eggs. It actually looked like a nest with some eggs on it. And just about the same time the farmer saw it, that same hen that wanted to be a mother so bad would notice that. And she ran over and fluttered down on top of those hailstones and just started clucking away as happy as you please. And the farmer thought, oh, that crazy hen, she thinks she's going to hatch out those hailstones. He walked away shaking his head, but that hen had made up her mind. She was going to see that job through to the finish. Every day when he went out there to the chicken yard, there she was, sitting on top of that pile of straw. And he laughed and laughed at that hen, but I think the hen had the last laugh. Because one morning, the farmer went out to the chicken yard, and there was that hen strutting along just as proud as a preacher's mama. And walking along behind her was a whole string of little penguins. She hatched out those ice eggs.
We're talking to storyteller Joe Hayes. So it's funny, when you tell a story, the whole digital and TV and movie and video game age just melts away.
Yeah, it seems to, doesn't it?
What's going on? I guess it's just, it goes deeper into the human psyche than this other, maybe more superficial kind of imagery.
Well, when you think about it, the human beings have passed their information along through stories for, maybe a million years. And then we've been reading stories for 150 years. And we've been getting stories from electronic media for 40 years. So we're much more programmed to receiving stories through telling. And in fact, through most of our history, telling stories has been essential to survival, because all of the information about the culture and the technology, and you have it, was passed on through stories. So,
and sometimes through the songs.
And through songs,
that are
right.
Basically stories.
That are the same kind of activity, right. So we have a genetic appetite for listening to somebody tell a story, receiving information directly from another person.
What are some of the characteristics of Native American stories from this region?
Well, it's hard to generalize the stories in general have more of what we would call a magical quality to them than perhaps some of the stories from Europe. Much more of animals and people and plants changing positions and changing roles and changing condition, that kind of thing. As far as the notion of a story with some kind of a challenge or a problem and some kind of a resolution, that seems to be universal. That those qualities show up in stories from all cultures.
The magical plants and animals and people all changing places. I was having a conversation with somebody who is a kind of a storyteller, a songwriter, and who was saying that in cultures where people go into trance or eat strange mushrooms, or their culture involves more really altered states of one kind or another, whether that be through dancing or whatever, there are more of those kinds of stories. Leprechauns.
Yeah, I'm sure that must be true, and more of an acceptance of those kind of stories without questioning it, because we have become so rational that we tend to say, well, what does that mean? What did that really happen? Or what are they trying to express by saying that?
Or that's not real.
Yeah, exactly. Rather than just absorbing it, and of course there are dream cultures. There are cultures that accept the experience of dreams as being every bit as real as the experience of the waking life. And people don't distinguish what happened to them in waking life and in dream life. It happened, regardless of which phase it happened in.
So what about the stories, the Spanish stories? Are they, are there stories that you know that you tell that actually came over from Spain?
Only,
or the stories
essentially
that
all
here?
Of them did. Yeah, actually, the folklorists have never really identified a story that is uniquely northern New Mexican,
really?
Hispanic. Yeah, essentially 100% of the stories are of European origin. And they were brought here in the minds of the people who came and colonized and settled, and they passed on down through the years. They sometimes they've acquired elements from local cultures, or elements from just the local environment. I mean, the fox might become a coyote,
right?
Or the poor shepherd who marries a princess might become a poor Indian boy who marries a princess, something
right.
like that. But the actual story and the storyline, they're essentially 100% European.
One thing I've noticed is if you've told a friend a story, and then you start to about your life, something that happened, whatever, and you start to tell it again, they'll say, or I'll say, oh, I already heard that. Whereas if you tell a kid a story, they want to hear the story again the next night, if
Absolutely.
It's a good story.
Yeah. You know, with the younger children, if they like a story, you finish the story, they'll say that again. They'll want you to start the story right there on the spot.
And what's that about? Because the first time, the surprise is revealed. After that, it's not a surprise anymore.
Yeah, but the security and the comfort of repetition is there. In modern culture, the emphasis is always on doing something fresh and different and changing constantly. In traditional cultures, the emphasis is always on doing the traditional thing over and over and doing it in the proper way. And even though in modern culture we have this emphasis on change, clearly the advertising business understands that that's not really what we want, because they repeat a commercial over and over and over, and then they make a shortened version of the commercial and repeat that, and then do a spin-off of that commercial and they repeat that, because they know if they really want the message to get through, they have to keep repeating it and repeating it, and that's what was done in traditional cultures. People heard the same stories every year, and then they really learned what the story had to teach.
Now, some stories, at least I don't know why I remember my childhood as well as I do, but I remember it in great detail. And one of the things I remember is that there are certain stories that were really annoying because they were clearly trying to shove some kind of moral down your throat and change your behavior therewith.
Yeah, aren't those obnoxious?
Yeah.
Yeah, and there is still a tendency of people to want to tell that kind of story. People will send me stories and say, what do you think of this story? And I would say probably 75% of them are very moralistic or very didactic. And I always felt, you get away from that message. Just tell the story, and if there's a message, it has to ring through, but it has to be under the surface. If stories are too blatantly didactic, then turn me off, and they turn kids off.
They do turn kids off. Mm-hmm. Very interesting. So what is it that turns kids on?
Well, I think more than anything else, sort of a sense of wonder. Kids like their minds to be hit with something that sort of opens them up and takes them into a little different level of existence for a moment. I think more than anything else, it's that. And in the storytelling context, it has a lot to do with just the way they feel about the person who's telling the story and how they're experiencing the story. The kids, I believe, have a real need for adults to interact very directly with them. And a part of the satisfaction is just feeling that person's talking right to me. And I've had parents come back to me and say, my little girl came home and said, this man came to the school and told stories. And I said, oh, did he read you a book? And she said, no, this just came out of his face. Things like that.
Right, right. We're talking to storyteller Joe Hayes. I guess it keeps the childlike part of you very much alive, because you have to run these stories through your own heart to see if they delight you.
Absolutely, yeah. You have to really enjoy it yourself or else the your pleasure is not going to come through when you tell the story.
So you've been doing this for 26 years at the Wheelwright. You've been doing it probably for longer than that in the rest of your life. Do you get tired of certain stories? Do you always have to refresh yourself with new material?
Well, I get tired of thinking of certain stories, but I've often noticed, you know, once I start to tell the story and start getting the reaction from the listeners, then I'm totally into the story, and it's never the same experience twice. You know, you never really tell the same story twice, because each time you tell it, the reaction is somewhat different, the situation is different, you feel different feedback coming from the listeners, and so it refreshes itself as soon as you start to tell the story.
How big an audience of young people can you have and still have it be that intimate storytelling experience with the children?
Yeah, it can't be too big. I feel as though the real maximum is maybe 200, but usually when I visit schools, I like to keep the audiences down to like 75 to 125 or something like that. And if I'm lucky and it's a smaller group, that's even better. But it has to be small enough so that everybody can see your eyes.
Right.
And you can see everyone else's eyes. For it to be real storytelling.
Now, you've been doing this for so long. Have you nurtured other storytellers who are now doing what you do?
Well, I like to think that I have, and I don't know of anybody who has really gone off and dedicated themselves to storytelling the way I have. I get a lot of feedback of people who use the stories with their classrooms, or they'll say, well, we went camping, we were telling some of your stories around the campfire. I even had a wonderful story of a young man who grew up here and used to come listen to me at the museum, and then became a journalist, and he was in Afghanistan with the Northern Alliance troops, and they were sitting around the fire one evening, and they started
telling
stories.
And he told Jorge's stories.
And he told the story of La Llorona the way he used to hear it from me to the guys in Afghanistan.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. That was, you know, just incredibly satisfying.
That's so, and you know, you wonder, I mean, this is something we could do an hour on, but the spread of stories, you know, that incident could possibly result in one of those people going and telling their children that story, and then the details get changed and it becomes a Middle Eastern story.
It could, exactly, yeah. Yeah, and that's one of the joys of telling stories, is you think, you don't know where the story's going to go. Who's going to pick up the story, who's going to tell it, what they're going to do with the story.
Right, right. It's like a little dandelion seed floating in the air. It's going to land somewhere.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, it kind of makes you feel like Johnny Appleseed planting some trees here and there in the forest, and you don't know. Some of them are going to grow, some of them are going to wither up, but...
Well, Joe Hayes is a storyteller celebrating his 26th year at the Wheelwright Museum, and he is telling stories on Saturday and Sunday evenings starting this weekend, July 19th, and it's at 7 o'clock. It's free admission. If anybody would like to call the Wheelwright Museum for more information, the number over there is 982-4636, extension 110, and it's also on the web at wheelwright.org. Joe Hayes, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you. This has been fun.
We're going to take a little break right now. Robert Knott will be here in just a second. Please stay tuned. I'd like now to welcome Robert Knott. He is the associate editor of the Pasatiempo, which is the Friday arts magazine in the Santa Fe, New Mexican, and he's here with us just about every Friday speaking of the arts. Welcome, Robert.
Good morning. Good morning. I've drank the whole night through. Good morning. Good morning to you.
You did.
How you doing?
I am fine. How are you?
I'm good, thanks. Joe Hayes, people got to go see him. Let's mention him again later in the show. And yeah, let's go up and listen to him at the Wheelwright.
Let's go up and pretend we're seven.
Well, that's something I do every single day. I'd like to get you to do it. That's the nice thing about coming out on Fridays. You let down your hair and you sort of become a kid again. None of this, what do you call it?
My hair is always down.
Hoi polloi stuff during the week. I like that necklace, by the way.
Well, thank you. The whole audience can see it.
Well, you've got to visualize some stuff when you're driving in your car. By the way, there was an accident right up here up Cordova It didn't look like anybody was hurt, thank God, and it looked bad. So, I mean, the cars looked wrecked, but I think people were wearing their seatbelts, which I urge you to do. But if you're driving down Cordova towards the baking company, there were some cars.
From the old Santa Fe Trail direction?
This Guadalupe intersection. Right, so okay. I hope it looked like everybody was good. Okay, so. Fair Trade Art, SFAI, otherwise known as the Santa Fe Art Institute on the College of Santa Fe campus. They're having the Artist in Residence July Open Studio on Thursday, July 24th at 5:30. Free admission, refreshments are served. And they're sort of being involved also with the Monday night talk at Tipton Hall by photo documentarians Armando Espinosa and Craig Johnson,
who are going to be on the air on Monday morning.
Even better. You got to pay to get into that one, but it's not too expensive. However, it's free to go to the Open Studio Tour at SFAI Thursday night, 5:30.
More information, 424-5050.
I was just about
and
to
I saw
say that
documentary. It's quite interesting.
Oh, good.
Yes.
Patty Levy's Photography. It's for a post-breast cancer fundraiser and print sale. Salon Margraf in Tsuki, Sunday, 2 to 5 p.m. She's a photographer and a model and a breast cancer survivor. And she is going to have this one-day event where her prints will be sold at a reduced price, and that will help sort of defray her own costs for her medical bills fighting cancer. You're interested in more? Go to the website, www.pattylevy.com. I'm going to spell out her name, P-A-T-T-I-L-E-V-E-Y.
You know, we have, I think, reached the point in history where you just don't have to say WWW anymore.
No, you don't. It's funny because I'm always talking about AAA and AA, which are two of the associations I belong to, but I never bring up the WWW.
It's a lot of syllables.
Well, it certainly is. The Rainbow Players, backed by popular demand. I always wonder what that means, especially if I never heard of them. Nonetheless, they're doing Over the Hill, Under the Rainbow.
And we had them on the air this week, too.
You certainly did.
And that was fun.
No, they're a fun group. And I saw the original at Rainbow Vision Center last year that Randy Bennett directed. Denise Cusell helped put these together. And it's a number of little anecdotes about growing up gay, and they're done in a theatrical style, and they have a lot of personality to them. 7:30 p.m. Sunday at the Silver Starlight Lounge at Rainbow Vision, 500 Rodeo Road, and then later in August, on the 23rd of August, Unitarian Universalist Church.
You'll laugh, you'll cry.
Yeah, and it does not say bad, 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 how much it is to get in. I can't say prices on
the air
anyway.
Well, we can't say it anyway, so.
But they want a donation at the door.
There we have it.
So there you go.
Hey, if you're between 14 and 25 years old and you want to learn skills that can make a difference, you can sign up for 2 weeks of radio production and communications course at the Santa Fe Community College Youth Media Project Summer Intensive. So you can get college credit, you can get a scholarship to attend, you can go to youthmediaproject.org to apply, and you can also call Judy Goldberg at 986-1880.
And if you're between 40 and 50... And
wait. Classes start on Monday, this coming Monday, the 21st, and space is limited, so you better just go to your computer right now for 986-1880 or youthmediaproject.org.
Excellent. If you're
there.
Between 40 and 50 and you're trying to avoid the IRS, call me. I've been doing that for years.
Really? Can you say more about that?
Not on the air.
Oh.
There's plenty of visual arts openings tonight. The Dark Room, 1901 West San Mateo Road, Suite O, has Small World, photographs by Diane DiRoberto and Philippe Augustine, 5 to 7 p.m., runs through September. The Gerald Peters Gallery has Max Weber, paintings from the 30s, 40s, and 50s, reception 5 to 7. Linda Durham Contemporary Gallery has a video installation by Susanna Carlisle and Bruce Hamilton called Elements. There's also some mixed media photo by Yozo Suzuki. New Concept Gallery, 610 Canyon Road, has new works by Nada Siebel, S-E-I-B-E-L, painting, sculpture, and collage, 5 to 7. And Verve Gallery of Photography on Marcy Street across from the New Mexican. Ocean, White, and Vessels, photos by Bong Chang Koo. Also photos by Maggie Taylor for a show called Alice and Everything After, 5 to 7 p.m. Full listing of gallery openings, check out page 76 of Paso Tiempo, Paso Week, compiled by Rob DeWalt and Pamela Beach. They got like 30 gallery openings tonight.
Hey, New Mexico Habitat for Hounds, bringing dogs in need of shelter together with kids who care. They're having their fundraising party tomorrow, Saturday the 19th of July, from 8 to 11 at the Silver Starlight Lounge at Rainbow Vision, 500 Rodeo Road, 428-7777. That must be a different night than the than the play.
Well, unless they're putting them together, who knows? You should never share the stage with a dog because they'll steal the show from you.
That's so true.
Theater and dance this weekend. It's the last chance to see Teresa Cardenas' flamenco production of El Pintor, The Painter, at the Lodge of Santa Fe. I am sorry to say I haven't seen it yet. 750 North St. Francis Drive. Tickets available at Delenzic, 988-1234. The Little Mermaid is Pandemonium Productions' take on the Disney tale that was told before then by Hans Christian Andersen, about a dame that swims around in the ocean and she falls in love with a guy on the shore, and she has all sorts of problems, mixed marriages, things like that, water shortages, stuff like that. They made it into a movie with Daryl Hannah. New Mexico School for the Deaf, 982-3327. Babe Inc. is 5 one-act plays by Rosemary Ziebert. They're comedies at El Museo Cultural.
Yeah, we just talked about them this week, too.
And nothing to do with the little movie about the cute pig with his ducky friend. 8 p.m. tonight, also over the weekend, call 982-5851. And finally, Romeo and Juliet and Midsummer Night's Dream being played in rep over at the Armory for the Arts Theater, starting at 7 tonight with Romeo and Juliet, with teens doing it set in the 60s. 984-1370, and then Saturday and Sunday afternoon is Midsummer Night's Dream with kids, 8 to 12, directed by Meg Burns, a wonderful young lady who I've worked with several times at Warehouse 21.
Now, there is an event that is free to the public at Open Hands, sponsored by Open Hands, and it is to honor Jim McLaren, who is a Yale athlete, a Yale graduate, accomplished athlete. He suffered two devastating accidents, but went on to become a record-setting disabled triathlete and motivational speaker. And Open Hands will honor him and Gina Montoya of Chimayo at the Open Hands Awards this Sunday, July 20th, from 12 to 2 at 2976 Rodeo Park Drive East in Santa Fe. Special guest presenters will be Wes and Mara Studi. And this event is free, open to the public. More information, 428-2346.
Guess what's happening this weekend all over the country?
Does it have to do with dogs?
No. Oh. It has to do with, if you change your mind, I'm the first in line. Honey, don't you see? Take a chance on me. ABBA, the Mamma Mia musical with Meryl Streep of all people.
I know, that is so weird.
I don't care. I'm going to see it. It opens at Regal 14. I have to go review it, and I can't wait to go. I grew up on ABBA. I grew up on Meryl Streep, and I lived in Greece for 2 years where this movie's set. It's a goofy plot. This girl decides that, like, she wants to find out which one of her mother's lovers was her father, so she invites them all to her wedding, like we would all do that, right? And then they come, and for reasons unbeknownst to me, they sing ABBA songs. That's terrific.
That's great.
Don't you think we should do something like that, only change it from ABBA to, like, the Monkees? Then we could do, like, Daydream Believer, and we could fit it all into our plot. It'd be, like, about inviting people to the Santa Fe Baking Company to find out who was,
I mean, at least the Beatles.
No,
I mean, why does it have to be the Monkees?
The Beatles have been done to death. Everybody does this yesterday. You get depressed hearing that song. The guy should have written it tomorrow. But the Monkees, they make you feel really good, you know?
The ultimate TV band.
I know it. When love comes knocking at your door.
How about the Partridge Family?
That'd be good, too. Those are good songs. Except it was always what's-his-name singing everything. Nobody else really ever sang.
David Cassidy.
What was the young girl's name? I really liked her. I was nuts about her.
Susan Day?
Yeah. Oh, she was so cute.
She was cute.
And then, like, 10 years later, I saw her in her movie, and she had no clothes on. That was fun. Where were we?
The more things change, Robert, the more they stay the same.
On Saturday, if you're up in the upper part of Canyon Road, pop into the Vintage Posters Rosenberg Collection Gallery for Jazz Masters. A portion of poster sales benefit Friends of Santa Fe Jazz, reception 2 to 5 p.m. Posters with jazz, and I believe they're going to have some live music, which brings me to the Santa Fe Jazz Festival.
Yay.
Pardon me, the New Mexico Jazz Festival.
Right.
There's Pharoah Sanders tonight, 7:30 at the Lensic.
Amazing.
988-1234. Chris Calloway's doing a gig with Burt Dalton. Paul Weideman wrote a big piece on it in today's Pasa Tiempo. Everything you want to know about the Jazz Festival. There's the Santa Fe Jazz Club Festival in tandem with it. New Mexico Jazz Festival has Burt Dalton and Chris Calloway with Arlen Asher, 7:30 p.m. on Sunday at the Lensic. I say call the Lensic, 988-1234, or pick up Pasa Tiempo.
Hey, how about this? An interdisciplinary choreography and performance workshop with Leslie Satan. She's been here in the past. It's at the Center for Contemporary Arts in Santa Fe. Tuesdays and Thursdays starting next week and running through running for 3 weeks. It's 5:30 to 7:30 in the evening, and it's at the Charisma Dance Studio. If you want to find out more information and register, you can call 982-1338, which is the CCA number, extension 17. And once the collaboration, I mean, once the workshop is done, they're going to do a performance piece that will be performed at the Rail Yard in Santa Fe on the 8th and 9th of August.
I changed my mind. I don't want to do the monkeys. Let's do Leslie Gore tunes.
Oh,
that would be great. We could get together a whole bunch of them. Like, what was that one? It's my party and I'll cry if I want to. And then it'd be like, and now it's Judy's turn to cry. Judy's turn to cry. Judy's turn to cry.
So stuck in another era. What's that all about, Robert?
I think it's got something to do with the sneakers I put on today. Or maybe it's the fact
that
my
suspender every day.
Got caught on the door.
It's every week. It's every year.
Well, I don't know. People say
it's sort of like from Groucho Marx to Leslie Gore. That's your sort of cultural range. I mean, it's fine, but it's odd.
No, it's not fine. There's always some sort of
it's fabulous.
Ineptitude about it that you're indicating with serendipity there.
I'm not indicating ineptitude.
Santa Fe Chamber Music Festival. For those of you that like Mozart, Britten, Brahms, and those other guys, they're all dead. Most of it's happening this weekend at St. Francis Auditorium, New Mexico Museum of Art. Pardon me. 107 West Palace Avenue, 982-1890. Craig Smith wrote about it extensively in today's Pasa Tiempo. And how many operas have you seen so far?
Let's see. In real life, I've only seen one, but I've seen them all on video or DVD.
Oh, so what did you see at the Santa Fe Opera?
The Marriage of Figaro.
Yeah, well, after he got married, they did the Billy Budd, which I thought was terrific.
Oh, and I was sick the night of the dress rehearsal, so I didn't go, but I want to go to that.
It's good drama and it's good opera. I really liked it. Craig Smith gave it a review in today's paper. Thank goodness he's back writing the opera reviews, and not
Yay.
Robert Knott, that buffoon they sent up there, and the tux looked like a baboon.
Have
with
you
glasses.
Seen Fall? I want to see Falstaff.
I haven't seen this version of Falstaff, but
it's such a great story.
Right, and they're also opening Handel's Radamisto. I think this weekend, Craig Smith wrote about it in Paso Tiempo. You want a phone number for the opera?
Yes.
It's 986-5900. Or check out santafeopera.org. We can get away with not doing www, but you got to say org or com or whatever.
Yes, you do.
Because otherwise people go the wrong way. Say, yes. What time is it?
What time is it? It's 8:48.
Okay, we're doing great.
So at Gig Performance Space tomorrow, Saturday, July 19th at 8 o'clock, San Francisco area duo Teslim features Kyla Flexer on violin and Gary Hegedus on oud and other instruments. And Santa Fe-based percussionist, the fabulous Polly Tapia Ferber, will be there as well. And they play Greek, Sephardic, and Turkish music and lots of compositions from those areas.
That's pretty good.
Yep.
If you like animals, go to the New Mexicans website. Just Google Santa Fe, New Mexican, and check out Scoop. That's the website for animals put together by Ben Swan, really good guy who works at the paper and obviously loves animals. And you can even participate by telling us something about your animals and put it on there. There's darling duckies, cuddly kitties, playful puppies, and hirsute horses. Everything you could possibly want, including slapsticky seals.
Including what?
Slapsticky seals. You know, seals are always involved with antics when they're in movies. You never saw that, where like the seals, well, of course there's no seals in New Mexico, unless it's the seal of approval, which I'm giving you right now since you're batting your eyes at me. And ladies and gentlemen,
I am
can
not.
She bat? She's doing it. She's doing it to me. You do. The things, if people could just see how you act when you tickle,
you're
stop
so
it.
Lying.
She's tickling. Stop it. Don't do that.
You can tell you're acting.
So what? Who can tell if you're acting? You're acting too whenever you get mad at me. You're like, oh, and then you put me down. It's all an act. Inside, you've got the heart of gold and who knows what else.
And
anyway.
Feet of lead.
Yeah, well.
Hey. Writing Women's Lives, the Santa Fe Writers Conference is next week, Monday through Friday. Denise Chavez, Natalie Goldberg, Sally Bingham, Anna Jane Hayes are among the New Mexico featured authors. And it's the theme is Writing Women's Lives at the Hotel St. Francis. All kinds of conversations, discussions, literary excursions, and events related to Spanish Market, which is at the end, which is at the weekend at the end of this writers' conference. For more information, you can call Ellen Bradbury at 982-9301.
Hey, there's some other things. I want to do some announcements for a minute because we don't know.
That's all we're doing is announcements.
No, but I want to announce things that, like, where people are looking for things instead of go to this art show tonight.
Ah.
So here we go. The Engine House Theater is looking for readers, performers, storytellers, and poets for a Madrid production of Words, Words, Words. You need material 7 to 10 minutes long. Could be work in progress, could be a seasoned story. Depends on what season it is or what you season it with. Contact Sleam, S-L-E-A-M, for details at 795-3742. There's an announcement in the PASA in the back, at page 84. Green Drinks, this is interesting. An environmentally conscious social group meets every fourth Tuesday. Better hope there's not like five Tuesdays in 1 month when that stupid leap day comes around. 6:30 p.m. every fourth Tuesday at the Rail Yard Restaurant in the Rail Yard. Check out lushgreendrinks@gmail.com, or I guess email them. When I was a bartender, I had to learn how to make like a grasshopper. Remember that drink?
With no.
Green creme de menthe and creme de coco and cream, and you mix it all up, and it's like a really smooth peppermint milkshake. So, you know, you have like five of these. You're thinking you're drinking milkshakes, and the next thing you know, you're buzzed. You're getting pulled over.
So you know that joke about how a grasshopper hops into a bar and he sits on the bar stool and the bartender peers off of the, over the edge and says, "Hey, we got a drink here named after you." The guy, the grasshopper, says, "Bob?"
That's good. Yes. Very nice. Let's see. What else? I was talking about something and I forgot it. Oh, the New Mexico filmmakers are looking for the third round of New Visions New Mexico Contract Awards. Two camera rental packages available. Free seminar on preparing things on August 8th. Check out the New Mexico Film Office's website or call them at 476-5600. I think that's like they're looking for shorts or they're looking for something. It doesn't say in this announcement, and that's not necessarily the film office's fault. It could well be pasatiempos. We didn't have enough info. Or maybe they didn't give us enough info. Always give us the info. Meanwhile, there's an Oshara Village sculpture competition. Outdoor sculpture for the second annual event here in Santa Fe. Deadline is August 19th. Email Anna at osharavillage.com. All these little notices, again, are in the Pasatiempo People Who Need People section in the back part of Pasatiempo near Rob DeWalt's Soundwaves columns.
And on Monday, July 21st at 6:30 at the Santa Fe Film Center, there's a special screening of the film, the New Mexico film, Do It for Uncle Graham, a 60-year-old tour through New Mexico's nuclear industry, made by local filmmaker Candy Jones. And that's on Monday. For more information, 438-3456.
That's pretty good. Sometimes people want to know about literary events. They say, "I want to go hear somebody speak or read or at least give a lecture." And I say, "That's good for you. Good luck." Anyway, in case you're wondering, there's a couple things going on this week. For example, Wednesday night, St. John's Graduate Institute Summer Lecture Series has Mark Singleton talking about Tantra in the Indian tradition. Ooh. 3 o'clock Wednesday, Student Center up there at St. John's College. It's free. 984-6000. On Thursday night, Dexter Cerillo is presenting a slideshow and signing copies of her book, Southwestern Indian Jewelry, Crafting New Traditions, at 5:30 at the Case Trading Post up at the Wheelwright Museum of the American Indian, 704 Camino Lejo, Museum Hill, 982-4636.
So the Wheelwright is in the news these days. Joe Hayes at the Wheelwright and all this other stuff.
There's a lot of people in the news. We just forget to tell them. Outside In presents Santa Fe Bandstand stuff,
yes,
down on the plaza. Every night, 6 o'clock, it's free. Also Tuesdays and Thursdays at noon. I'll give you a quick listing.
Every night, 7 days a week?
Monday through Thursday. Yeah, to take the weekend off so people can go down there and desecrate the place. On Monday night, for example, Ron Hellman Jazz Ensemble and Clan Tinker join up, 6 p.m. On Tuesday night in the evening, for example, it's Afri Latin Jazz Ensemble, Le Chat Lunatique, at 6 o'clock, no charge.
Does that mean the crazy cat?
I reckon it does. I don't try to interpret anything that's not Brooklyn. And Thursday night...
You're not from Brooklyn.
Well, I'm from Queens, but when you say
you're
Brooklyn...
You're not from Queens.
Yeah, but either way, it doesn't matter because it's got a panache that it doesn't have when you say you're from Poughkeepsie. Santa Fe Bandstand on Thursday night presents...
What's wrong with being from Poughkeepsie?
It's nothing necessarily wrong. The problem is...
What's panache-less about it?
It's just that sometimes it's not a matter of right and wrong. That's the problem I get into when we start talking about semantics on this program.
No, you're talking about panache.
I know what I'm talking about. I can go get a dictionary and look it up if you want me to. But
all right, go ahead.
For example, if you say you're from Hoboken, what do people think?
Well, are you equating Hoboken and Poughkeepsie?
Mention Gallup and see what kind of response you get. Go ahead and say Vaughan, New Mexico.
Music on the Hill at St. John's, Wednesday, July 23rd from 6 to 8, Wagogo. It's on the athletic field at St. John's, and you can bring a picnic and you can hang out. And I actually tried to go the other day, and it was canceled due to weather, even though it was sunny. I was so sad.
Going back to Brooklyn. What time is it?
8:55.
That's pretty good.
Yeah.
There's lots of museums you should consider going to, particularly since most of them on Sunday have free admission for New Mexico residents. I also want to point out that the Santa Fe Children's Museum always has a number of hijinks, antics, shenanigans, and some really artistic efforts to keep your kids interested. 1050 Old Pecos Trail. For example, today, poetry in the garden at 1 o'clock. Saturday, 2 o'clock, cooking activities in the Earthworks Garden. I hope they're not going to, like, bake worms or something. Thursday, make clay pots, 1 to 4.
Those aren't worms. Those are hot dogs.
And Tuesday, make paper dolls, 1 to 4 o'clock. It's over at the San Fenius. Now you got me. I will never eat another hot dog. What is it when you put the prospect of intimidation in somebody's head and you make them think about something that they weren't thinking about?
That's what we do with you every week.
But what's that called? Inference?
No.
It's called something like inspiration or edification, or maybe it's, what is that? You know, you've got me thinking of something else. Now you're going to, see, this is the thing. You wonder why I don't come on more often.
What do you mean? You come on every week.
Yeah, well, yeah.
How much more often would you like to come?
Well, I wouldn't mind.
Would you like to be here every day?
No, I wouldn't go
that. Holding my hand?
Well, I wouldn't mind going that far, but I don't want to go the other far. What do you call it? You put something in my head now.
Are you trying to find the word meme?
No, meme is the plural of mind. You get two guys on a table who ain't talking and they're doing everything with their hands. That's a couple of memes.
The power of suggestion?
The power of suggestion.
Okay, then.
And can I suggest something for you?
No.
It's got a lot of power to it. Mary Charlotte, how you doing? You're just a dame who's got a show on KSFR. Do you smile to tempt your boyfriend's Mary Charlotte? Or is that just kinda, well, you know the way you are? When your eyes sparkle like they do, Mary Charlotte. A guy like me can only feel like he's in heaven. Many guys may have fallen at your doorstep. Here comes the music, I better schlep. See you around, hope you're well, Mary Charlotte. Because you got the best radio show in Santa Fe on KSFR. Goodbye.
Robert Knott
That's
is
me.
The associate editor. I was waiting for the rhyme with heaven. Robert Knott is the associate editor of the Pasatiempo, Friday Arts Magazine in the Santa Fe, New Mexican. He's with us here every Friday, just about every Friday, speaking of the arts. And you've been listening to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. It's great to have you back, Robert. You just took off your glasses.
It's great to have my front
now
hair,
now you're
too.
Growing a beard again, and a mustache.
I don't shave for 2 weeks. I got to hear commentary on it.
And now it's not commentary. It's just statement of fact for our viewers at home, our listeners at home, who can't see you through their webcams because we don't
can't
have
mention
a webcam.
Your two gorgeous, beautiful eyes on
you
the air
just
without you saying
did.
That our viewers can't see it.
You've been listening to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Mary Charlotte.
KSFR
streams live on the web.
That sweater
makes KSFR. It's not a sweater. It's a T-shirt.
Stand up.
KSFR.org. You can email me at radio. If you don't watch out, I'm going to turn down your volume. You can email me at radiocafe@ksfr.org or leave a message at 428-1528. We're also podcasting at the website santafe.radiocafe.org, where you can hear the show anytime you want with Robert Knott panting in the background, thanks to Santa Fe's .foil computer services.
I brought my pants.
And you can also subscribe to the show on iTunes. Is that what makes you pants?
Because of my shirt.
Is your pant? Thanks.
Stumbling.
You're making me stumble. You're making me flustered, Robert. Thanks to Mary Lynn LeBlanc for engineering today. Stay tuned for the BBC, followed by
beard.
Local news by KSFR's award-winning news team. And after that, jazz a la carta.
Que tenga buen fin de semana, ¿ok?
Tú también.
Sí,
usa tu cintura de seguridad. Use your seatbelt. Be happy.
Sí,
be peaceful.
See you around.
See you around.
Ciao.
Hasta
ciao.
La vista. Ready?
Yeah.
Ciao.
Oh, I'd love to.